We still have a problem. We still have a very big problem that in most engineering fields, the percentage of women involved is very low. When they see those numbers, it's very easy to default to, oh, well, they don't want to do it. They can't do it.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
This Women in Tech road trip is powered by Kia Niro Touring. Yes, Kia provided us the most fuel-efficient, comfortable car to be our mobile podcasting studio as we drive state to state, Los Angeles to New York, celebrating Women in Tech, featuring them on the Women in Tech podcast. First of all, it has cooled seats. It has the most silent AC. You can't even hear it. I leave it on low during the interviews and it is perfect. No disruption at all. You have fuel efficiency because it's hybrid. It comfortably stores all of our stuff. And there's three of us in this car with a ton of backpacks and mic gear and video gear. The Kia Niro Touring is phenomenal. Simply could not be possible without Kia. A huge thank you. Enjoy the Women in Tech road trip series. Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. Okay, so you guys know I'm on the road trip driving state to state from Los Angeles to New York in this amazing Kia Niro Touring. So excited, celebrating these just awesome women in tech. And I have found one of the coolest cities I think I've experienced on the road trip, Clarksdale, Mississippi. It's full of this like incredibly magical vibe and just soulful music and awesome, hospitable people. I can't say enough good things about this town. I cannot wait to come back. And being in this town, I've had the opportunity to encounter Christy. Hello.
Hello. Afternoon.
So go ahead and introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about who you are.
Okay. My name is Kirsty Mills. You might guess from the accent that I wasn't born in the States. I'm English by origin and did my engineering training at the University of Nottingham back in, I'm not very good at remembering years. I think it was about 68, I think, or 70, I went to university. Got my first degree in electrical engineering, electrical and electronic engineering. Then went on and did a PhD where I was really looking at semiconductor material science. And then worked at a couple of companies in England, Plessey, in the middle of the countryside, in the middle of nowhere, which was a thing in its own right, at a research establishment. And then moved to France and worked for Thomson CSF outside Paris for about 5 years. Again, in semiconductor processing technology. And then my husband and I got headhunted over to the States. We worked for GE up in Syracuse, where people would tell us how cold the winters were in England. And we would have to say, you have no idea. There is nothing like a Northeast winter. And then in, what would it be? Round about 1991, we moved to Albuquerque.
New Mexico. Yeah.
University of New Mexico. And I wound up at the University of New Mexico doing some administration, but also getting into engineering ethics. For the past few years, I've been editing an engineering journal. So really sort of the technical side and organizational side of that in terms of engineering education.
And what brought you to Clarksdale, Mississippi?
Well, the music. I play bass now. And we've been coming in to Clarksdale for probably the last 3 or 4 years. And during that period, we were living in Florida. And by the time you've loaded a car with guitars and basses and clothes and food and da-da-da, and driven 2 hours, 2 days, I beg your pardon,
right,
to get, you know, up the Florida Peninsula or across the Mississippi, then you spend 2 or 3 weeks here playing music, then you load the car up and you drive 2 or 3 days back, at a certain point you start thinking, wait a minute, we need to move. And that's what we did. We moved, and so we're playing a lot of music.
Wait,
here.
When did you start playing bass?
I started playing bass about 3 years ago.
I think that that's really inspiring that at any point you could pick up a new skill. I mean, what inspired you to play bass in the first place?
My husband has been playing guitar since he was about 12. And, you know, growing up in England in the 60s and 70s, music was...
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up at the best time for music. And, but it was always something that I was kind of, you know, like the kid with the nose pressed to the candy shop window.
You know,
it's not for me. But then when we had friends who, lots of friends in France, who every summer would do big parties. And
yeah,
everyone would get up on a little makeshift stage and do something. And I was the one that never did anything. And when I turned 60, I thought, this must stop. You know, this must stop. I've got to do something. And we were at the festival. We had an apartment in La Rochelle on the west coast of France. And there was a film festival there every year. And they were showing, what was it? It was John Wayne in Rio Bravo. And there's that scene where, I think it's Rio Bravo, but it's the scene where he's in the jail with Walter Brennan and Ricky Nelson. And they're doing My Rifle Pony and Me. And Walter Brennan is playing very sweetly on the harmonica. And I thought, how difficult could that be?
Right.
And what I didn't realize is, in fact, harmonica is a fiendishly difficult instrument. But I spent a couple of years working very, very hard on the harmonica. And that's actually what started to bring us in here. I was hanging out whilst my husband Steve was doing the guitar workshops. And one day I thought, I've got to get a bass. I just need to get a bass. It literally was, you need to get a bass. And I went off and did that. And I've been working like a dog ever since.
That's amazing.
And it's just wonderful.
That's amazing.
We go off and play at jams and we record songs.
I love that. It's never too... My mom always, like, she's always like, what are you in such a rush for? You could reinvent your life one million times. You're fine.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you need to.
Yeah.
You need to, because things change all the time.
Yeah.
And you got to keep yourself excited.
Yeah. Definitely. So talking about being excited, I was really excited to share your story because you started in technology. First of all, when it wasn't cool, I think, for women to be in tech. I mean, it wasn't even a thing for women to be in tech, right? So,
well, I went to a convent school, and my father's in the military. So I grew up out of England until I was about 7, came back and went to a convent school until I was 11. Not that we were Catholic. Not that anyone that believes in religion in Europe anymore, but hey. Went to the grammar school and then decided I was going to be an engineer. And it was partly to be a bit of an outlier. I mean, I like science, but it was an unusual thing to do. And I'm not one for joining in herds. But a memory is that the Reverend Mother of the convent, when she heard about that, I think if I'd have said I was going to go on the streets of the Reeper Barn in Amsterdam, in Hamburg, would have had a much the same reaction. You know,
it
truly was going to the bad. And I think I was the second woman to study electrical engineering at my university. In fact, I think to study engineering at my university. So,
That's incredible. And you didn't feel intimidated by that at all?
Well, I've never felt, I mean, mentally, I sort of feel androgynous. I don't think there is a sex to your brain. No, I wasn't intimidated. I mean, sometimes I actually think, and I'm talking about the time I went through this, you have to believe without consciously doing it, but there's a need to believe that the playing field is level. And I think it took me about 10 years to go to really see how unlevel it was.
10 years?
Well, yeah, there's a point in your career you go, you know, there were some things that...
But 10 years, What I find beautiful about that, and tell me if you intended it in a different way, but what I personally find beautiful is for 10 years, you were like, I can't be bothered with what's not possible or what people are saying. Let me just focus on what I want and what I want to achieve.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. I mean, you just keep going for it. And I think we're goal-oriented creatures, you know, so you're going to get your, in England, you got your A-levels. And then you went to university and you got your first degree. And then you enroll for a PhD. And so you're going to get a PhD. And okay, then you're going to do a fellowship. And then you're going to do a job. And, you know, and so on.
Right, right.
And that's what you're focusing on. And then you've got your research goals. As
right.
Well, and the people you're working with. But the truth is you don't always see doors that don't open.
Right.
You know, they didn't open, but you don't notice they don't.
Interesting.
And I mean, when we were working in France, I was actually given a promotion that then got taken away because the guys refused to work for a woman. And that was a slightly mind-opening moment.
How did you respond to that?
I was pretty livid.
But yeah. Was there any solution?
There wasn't a solution.
It just got taken away and that was it?
That was it. And I mean, I can't remember exactly at what point of my time in France that was. But I mean, I was having a really good time in France, but nothing else, which, you know. But no, I mean, there were things. There were things.
Now, when did you first discover you were in love with technology?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure I'm in love with technology.
Interesting.
But I ever was. I was very much in love with being autonomous, with seeing the world, with being able to pay my way in life, with using my mind. And I've always had a very wide range of interests. And I wouldn't necessarily say that technology was the foremost of my passions.
Right.
But it was very pragmatic to take that route.
I mean, but was it though? Because if you were the second woman to pursue, you know, like...
From my point of view,
yeah.
I did actually toy with switching to English or history. But in terms of the way that studying technology, especially doing research, you know, your first degree teaches you things, your advanced degrees teach you how to think.
Right.
And you know, really think your way through a problem. And it completely changes you and you become something other.
Right.
And that has been really good. But I think there are multiple paths you can follow. And the thing I was always really scared of was winding up under a bridge starving to death. You know.
Right.
And you look at people we know, clearly following a lot of passions can leave you quite high and dry at certain points in your life.
And it's never too late to become a bass player.
It's never too late to become a bass player. It's true.
It's interesting to me that whether it's today or then, that a career in technology does give you a lot of power because it's in high demand. It's a skill that many people need. And as our world expands, we continue to need it more and more and more. It pays very well.
Okay.
It's really interesting that that particular aspect of it has been timeless.
Well, I think that's the big thing. It grants you so many opportunities. And you can pick the path you want to follow. So I think that was important. And it's become very consuming as well. So during my process, well, especially because we were in research, so you were writing government proposals, you know, for funding, and at the university, that swallows you up. You know, it's intense.
And where, I mean, I'm livid to hear that you were, I know this is a thing, but it's never easy to hear that you were offered this promotion and then it got taken away for ridiculous reasons. Where have you seen, or how have you seen women in technology evolve from something terrible that happened to you then to where we are today?
Well, you know, I have colleagues who are deans at universities, who are heads of department, who are making their lives. And that, I think, has changed a great deal. We still have a problem we still have a very big problem that in most engineering fields, the percentage of women involved is very low. It's, you know, it was always described as a pipeline thing, as, you know, more women go through. It's still staying, depending on the field, but, you know, plus or minus 10%.
Right.
It's low. And I'm talking about engineering,
right,
you know,
right,
specifically. And biotechnology, not quite the same. Bioengineering, they're doing better. Computer engineering, you know, IT, real problem area. They've got a lot of problems with harassment. And there's a culture, I think, that's a problem. And I get asked why it is that women aren't doing that. And it's such a spectrum of answers, especially the academic side of things. Research functions very much on an apprenticeship model.
Right.
And we tend to take people like us, right? So it's a difficult thing to pull apart. I mean, wasn't it? I think it was Larry Summers that suggested that there was a potential biological female inability to do science, but I think we can.
Oh my gosh, yeah, exactly. There's so many things like that.
I think that's the thing, though. When they see those numbers, it's very easy to default to, oh, well, they don't want to do it. They can't do it. Whereas I think it's much more cultural issues that make it difficult. And one thing I think is, you know, there's the classic thing in meetings that if women speak up in meetings, they're seen as being overly talkative. And if they're quiet, they're seen as being submissive.
So interesting.
But if you look at the research, it's women tend to talk. Is the men that talk more, but they think the women are talking more than they are.
Interesting.
There's an implicit assumption that the women are, you know, essentially what it boils down to is that there's still, I think, a cultural sense that women should be quieter than they are. But what's great is in engineering, the women I know are just doing it. They're just going out and have gained the ones I'm thinking of, you know, you gain enormous respect.
Yeah. I found in talking and doing all these interviews, I think we've done somewhere between, I think it's just under 200 interviews or something now. And one common thing is people who've had exposure to technology in their home as a child are more apt to get into the tech space. And I think that one solution we could do as a community is just like creating more board games for women related to technology, like something that's an equivalent of Legos or something. I know my father got me into tech when I was little. And so that's one thing, but it scares me. And it's also very logical at the same time. It scares me to think that there is this cultural difference and that seems more out of control. Like, how do you fix that right away? But it's logical in the senses of like, and, you know, look where we came from. Of course, it's going to take time to change habits. Those can't change fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one, it's very chicken and egg. Until you fix it, it won't get fixed.
Yeah.
You know. But
what do you suggest we do? How can we, or how can this conversation be a part of the solution? What can we do as a community?
I think we have a huge overarching problem, which is that work is changing in very fundamental ways. When I came out of university, you walked out the door and you trip over a few jobs. You know,
yeah,
they needed people to work. We're coming to the point where we're needing fewer people to do work, you know, robotics, sort of internet technology, well, sort of all computing technologies,
right?
I think have removed the need for a lot of low-level labor. And so and we're also seeing, you know, the rise of the gig economy as a result of that, that we're seeing a shift from companies that, think of Kodak in Rochester in the 60s, 70s, 80s. They were concerned about their customer, their stockholders, shareholders, their workers,
right,
and you know other things as well. But those it was like a tripod of responsibilities.
Right,
two of those tripod legs have gone. Now all they you know, is the shareholder. So the people who aren't needed, if you like, we're seeing the effect of that in individuals' lives in America. I mean, the opioid crisis is.
Yeah.
Completely linked to that. And so I think one huge thing is just a realization of how we train people to have a place in a world where you don't need disposable labor, or, you know, where disposable labor is very easily replenishable. And I think for women, actually having skills that will mean you're, for women, being financially viable is rule number one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't have to rely on other people. And so that, I think, is a big deal, a really big deal.
One last question. And also I want to share with everybody, if you're open to it, if there's a way that if somebody wants to reach out to say hello, how they could get in touch with you. Actually, go ahead. Is there some way that somebody could look up your work or say hello or get in touch that you're comfortable with?
I suggest if you wanted to get in touch with me, contact the podcast and they can forward it.
Sounds good. And so you guys just tweet at Women in Tech Show or all the other places on the socials. It's all Women in Tech Show. My last question, how do you overcome challenges? Like learning how to play bass now.
I think, you know, when the fairy godmother is standing over your cradle, you know, the gifts you get. What I basically got was discipline and diligence. And I feel that I wouldn't consider myself a talented person, but I think when there's a mountain ahead of me, I just climb it. And you just keep going. You're the Energizer Bunny. You don't let go.
And it never stops.
Never stops. Maybe, who knows? You know, you look back, but maybe it's having an addictive personality just put to good use.
I love it.
Well, I mean, you know, because if you think about it, people say they don't have time to exercise, they don't have time to do this and that, but they do have time to watch a video, say.
Right.
You know.
Totally.
You just decide how you're going to use your time.
Completely.
You know? And you know, you've got to stay interested. And planning. I mean, because again, I think that was a big deal that I got out of doing a PhD. You really look at any situation and you evaluate the situation. It's not just what's ahead of you. It's all the contingent realities that impact on that and how they play out and how they interact and what the implications of that are. So you're doing multiple level analyses, really, and it takes you forward.
Awesome. You guys, thank you so much for being on the Women in Tech podcast. I have loved bringing this episode to you guys, or I'm trying to get better and I'm trying to say to y'all. And a huge shout out to Megan for connecting us. That was awesome. I will see you guys, hear you guys, talk to you guys in the next episode. If you want to connect with more extraordinary women in tech, be sure to go to the Women in Tech Facebook group at womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. It takes you straight to the Facebook group so you don't have to figure out which one it is. Enjoy the rest of the day. Bye. This Women in Tech road trip is powered by Kia Niro Touring. Conchetta, who we're about to interview, is about to say all sorts of things. I wouldn't let her tell me before because I wanted it to be fresh. What are you about to say?
This is craziness. Okay, I am in the market for a car, and I just spent yesterday afternoon at Kia listening to them talk about how the Niro broke the Guinness Book of World Records.
No, I didn't even know that.
Traveling across the country with the fewest gas stops. I cannot believe I'm sitting in it right now.
A huge thank you to Kia for powering this road trip series of the Women in Tech podcast.
The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you.